show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, lots of good things to talk about for Royals baseball this week. But before we get into that, introductions, of course. I am your host, Jeff Hur. With me, as always, the feckless Bane himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing?
I mentioned this before we started recording, but my elbow's a little sore, so I'm day-to-day, I guess.
Day-to-day. You and Kyle Zimmer riding the pine, just stretching out that arm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've got the same number of innings in the big leagues, so we're exactly the same.
That is true. So there you go. You know, you learn something new every day. Dare to dream, folks.
Right.
But despite Kyle Zimmer, the Royals have actually been putting together some good news, some good things happening, some positive vibes going on with the Royals. Right now, the Royals are on a 3-game winning streak, folks. And I feel like I'm going back into the condescending celebration of a winning streak in the 2010-2011 days, but after all the consternation that's developed around this team over the last month or so, it is good to see them put together a nice little streak. They've won two series in a row. Of course, we're recording this on a Wednesday, May 18th, so this is as a frame of reference there, and that's the day of the doubleheader with Boston. So the Royals won the first game, and they won the night before. So they've won two games out of the series. So the third game, in terms of winning the series, doesn't matter because the Royals have that wrapped up. But they'd obviously like to get a sweep here. The Royals are above 500. It may be short-lived. It may only last a few hours. But they're above 500 for the first time in a while. And it's good news. You know, they not only have they won three straight, but then you go back, they've won 5 of 7. They took 2 out of 3 from the Braves, which, good Lord, they should have.
Right.
It's the worst team in baseball. And matter of fact, that was a struggle. So it was leaving the Braves series there, you still didn't feel, at least I didn't feel all that great about it, because they won one game, looked pretty dominant, first game of the series. And you're like, okay, well, maybe the Braves are an awful team, allow the Royals to kind of work out some things and get back on track. And then they get smoked like 5-0 in the second game of the series. And it's like, oh my Lord, what is, come on. And it's one of those situations where you, man, you know, like we just can't get over that hump, you know, one step forward, one step back. They were in that 2 games below 500 range for quite a while. You have to get a streak to get out of something like that. Won that final game against the Braves in 13 innings with a 2-run walk-off slam by Kenrys Morales, who Morales had a lot of problems this year, been just a lot of bad luck, and he just launched one over the center field wall. Took care of business. They got the win, even though it wasn't in spectacular fashion, and probably should have been a little bit easier against a team as woeful as the Braves. But they rode that momentum into a solid 8-4 win against the Red Sox in game one of that series, and then a really solid 3-2 win against the Red Sox today. Some good pitching from Ian Kennedy, some really good pitching from the bullpen. And of course, the final match tonight, they'll play David Price, which, see, you know, is always scary when you're going up against David Price, but he's been struggling a bit this season. So he's got like a 6-1 record or something, but his ERA is 6.0, I believe, or something absurdly awful.
Very un-David Price.
Like. Right. Yes, exactly. And the Royals, you know, the Royals have done a really good job of not being intimidated the past few years by ace starters. And not only that, you know, they've hit David Price before. They hit him in the playoffs last year. So, I mean, they've got some confidence they can take care of business. So hopefully, you know, they that's what they do, and they get the series sweep. They're above 500 now. And then of course they lose, they'll go back, but if they can win this final game of the Boston series, get that sweep, they'll be 21-20 heading into an off day and then a series against the White Sox, which could be a pivotal point in the season. But, you know, Mike, we talked about last week on the show, I think it was last week, maybe it was the week before, but how the team seems like, you know, the narrative of, oh, these guys are coasting, they're not trying, it's actually the reality seems to be more like the flip side of that, which is that they're trying too hard. And we talked about how it seems like maybe they're all trying to be that moment that really switched it on and flipped things around, and they kind of take off like the Jose Reyes play in Toronto in 2014, and, you know, different plays in 2015, or, you know, whether it's the, you know, an Alex Gordon walk-off home run or whatever the case may be. So I'm wondering, Mike, could Kendrys Morales' walk-off home run, even if it's just against the Braves, but in the 13th inning, needing that win to win the series, to keep them – because if you come out of that series and you're 17-20, that feels a lot worse than 18-19 does, which is what they were when they came out of that series. So, mm-hmm. I mean, do you get the feeling that it could be that moment there?
I hope so. You know, this is a team that goes on so many of those emotional kind of keys, and they work so much off of the big moments, the crazy comebacks, and, you know, instilling that kind of feeling that, hey, we've gotten through this, we can make this comeback, we can do it. So I hope that works out. That was a weird game just following it, because the Royals, you know, they had been kind of wiped out the night before, really couldn't do anything on offense. On Sunday, they scored a run early, they scored a run late and gave it to Wade Davis, and Wade Davis gave up two runs to the Braves of all teams to blow the save. Like, that's like at that stage, you know, with all the things that had happened at this point to the Royals, you got to think, what's next? Because it's just like the craziest things seem to end up happening, where, you know, guys get to slow starts, and you get starting pitchers who just can't seem to do well, and just so many different things that have not gone their way through the first quarter of the season. And then even through the extra innings, they end up, you know, they pull it off in the end. I hope that it's a good jumping off point. You know, I kind of thought the same thing earlier in the month when they got that walk-off win where Lorenzo Cain hit that ball to center field against the Nationals, and they, you know, won what I think it was 8-7 in that game, but they got trounced in the day after, and it didn't seem to give them any momentum at all. And then they went on a road trip. They struggled, just didn't look good against Cleveland. They didn't really do very well in New York. They played well enough to win some of those games, but they didn't win them. And, you know, I think the low point going into the week was that 7-10 loss against the Yankees, where Lorenzo Cain hits three homers. And you still lose, and it's like, well, you know, you can't win the low scoring games, you can't win the high scoring games. Nothing seemed to kind of fit together. They get kind of a palate cleanser in Atlanta. It's probably a series that was sweepable, but, you know, Foltynewicz, I think I'm pronouncing his name right. In the second game,
I heard Foltynewicz. Or Foltyna something.
Yeah.
I think Foltynewicz. I think that's what we'll go with.
That's what I'm sticking to that. I mean, he pitched great. So, I mean, it's tough to beat a guy that you've never seen who is pitching very well. They were fortunate to beat Atlanta on Sunday. And then you kind of ended up at a point where, okay, you get a rainout on Monday. You get a day off for a bullpen that has been overworked. The other thing on that Sunday game that went 13 innings, Danny Duffy started it on a pitch count of 50. So he only got three innings. They ended up having to get three innings out of Scott Alexander, who had thrown like 30 pitches the night before. So they were really fortunate to be in a spot where they didn't have to rely on Chengming Wong to cover like four or five innings in extra innings. And they ended up winning. And so I think you came into Tuesday last night, and last night was probably the funnest game I've watched all year. I mean, it felt the same as the team from last year. And that's what everybody's kind of been remarking on. you know, you get to a point where you get guys on second and third, infield's in, Paulo Orlando puts the ball through, you know, it's a singles parade, it's keep the line moving, it's that whole thing. And the Royals kind of worked on it. And the whole time, Yordan Ventura looked pretty good for probably 90% of his start, which he's had some rough ones. The last batter he faced was the only batter that he walked, so that's a fortunate thing. But you go in. I didn't get the chance to watch much of this game. I watched about three innings while I was on lunch today for the early part of the doubleheader. And Ian Kennedy was striking guys out, and then later in the game there was a lot of great defense that ended up helping the Royals preserve the win. And when you look last night and tonight, those are the types of games that you were used to the Royals winning last year. And if there's anything coming out of the rest of this game that the Royals, hopefully they sweep the doubleheader and they sweep the series with Boston. If that's something that pushes them into the next road trip on a high note and with some momentum, then that's excellent, because then they can get back to playing the Royals baseball that we got used to over the last two seasons, and we can kind of get past the first 40 games of the year where things didn't quite go as well. Nothing seemed to fit, a little bit out of sync in a couple of areas. Maybe it is something where they come off of Boston's hitting like crazy this year, but if you can get a sweep at home and use that to go play the team in first place in your division, I mean, that could be a very positive thing for this team. And again, for a team that feeds off of those things and seems to really connect with each other and get, that team concept going. There's not a lot of negatives out of this series, especially if they do finish off the sweep.
Yeah. And even if it always with the doubleheader, I think it always feels that way where if you win the first game and then you lose the second game, it's like, well, that kind of sucks. But in this situation, especially, you're like, okay, we won the first game. They really dumped all their resources to making sure they won that game and won the series. And I'm not sure how, Hochaver, Herrera, Davis all pitched in that first game. I got to think they probably wouldn't even be available for this second game now. So,
maybe Herrera only pitched, he only threw like seven pitches, and Davis hadn't pitched in a while. So those two, they're probably available. Hochaver's pitched a lot lately. They've also got, Alexander, Flynn only threw like seven pitches.
Flynn didn't throw very many pitches.
They've got 14 pitchers on the roster right now because it's a doubleheader, and they called up Alec Mills to be the 26th guy. So they've got arms if they need them.
I mean, it's always kind of weird trying to juggle that kind of stuff with a doubleheader. I think if it was, especially with a day off tomorrow, if they're up 4-3 in the ninth inning, I don't think I don't think Ned would have a problem calling Wade Davis in to try and close it out just to make sure they get the win.
They've done it a few times before. Pretty much every opportunity the last couple of years with the doubleheader, if they've been able to win them. I remember Holland in Boston, I think in 2013, had a similar kind of situation where he closed the early game and then they took the lead late in the second game and he closed that too. So I don't think there's any hesitance to go ahead and use them, especially if it means locking down a win and, hitting the road on a high note.
Yes. And, it's I'm really hoping that they're kind of back on track a little bit. They've because you alluded to it when talking about, Lorenzo came with a three home runs in one game. And the offense has really started to, as you said about game one against Boston, talking about, it felt like last year, they've really woken up. Not only did they score eight runs against Boston, they scored the seven against New York. I mean, they've over the that seven game stretch where they've been 5-7. What did we calculate before? There was a
4.3 runs per game, pretty much.
Yeah. So I mean, that's not you're not the Cubs.
No,
those kind of numbers. But when you're the Royals with as good a bullpen as they have, four and a half runs should be enough to get you a win on most nights. And for a little bit there, it wasn't, especially when you lose a game 10-7. So those are like 2006 Royals numbers, you know.
Right. Where, those are games where, I guess 2006 would be too late for it, but, like, you know, the games where Max Suzuki or Roberto Hernandez or Ricky Pitalico or any of those guys are coming in and blowing it.
Yeah, it's where it's just like, man, what do you got to do? You score seven runs and you lose. And that was one of the, I mean, that game, it still felt that way because you had going up against Masahiro Tanaka and then you score seven runs in that game, even though they weren't all against him. One of them was against Andrew Miller. And you're like, man, this is, you know, you'd take that every single time facing those two pitchers, getting seven runs against those two. And they still couldn't get the win. It's like, man, what do you got to do? That's when it starts, when you really start to worry about the psyche of a team and just kind of snowballing a little bit. You know, whatever you want to say about momentum and whether it exists or not, you know, there is a mental component to the game. And there are times I feel like where, just like last year, it seemed that no matter what the Royals did, everything turned up blue, everything turned up Royals. It all went their way. And I think that became a mindset that it was all going to go their way. I think the same thing can happen in reverse, obviously, where, you know, now you get to, okay, this something else is going to happen. It's not going to go our way. And a game like that is where it really, you can really reinforce that feeling, a negative feeling, of course. So good to see them kind of take a couple of games, but hopefully they've kind of shaken out of that. And now with the walk-off home run against Atlanta and having a couple good games against Boston, who's basically been the class of the American League for the last week or so, at least, you know, and they've got one of the best, was it second best record in the league, or no, the best record in the American League. So the winning two games against them, as poorly as the Royals have been playing, is good. If they can finish the sweep, then they're heading in to Chicago with a 21-19 record. I mean, I would feel very good about that, and got to think that playing against the White Sox, who a team that, you know, last year in April when they had all the stuff, you know, all the, it's technically it was on the field, but it was kind of off, you know, not in play stuff with all the jawing back and forth and the talking in the media and the fights and the suspensions and all that. You know, it really, that was one of the things that was kind of cited at the beginning of the season as charging them and kind of pushing that emotion up that they rode for a large part of the season. So you got to wonder if, especially if they can win tonight, 21-19, going into Chicago, and then maybe just seeing Chicago again. Chicago's leading the division now. You're looking up at them instead of them looking up at you. All the stuff that happened last year, put all that together, maybe it kind of gets the juices flowing, gets the emotions running a little bit. And man, nothing. I mean, if you sweep Chicago at that point, I mean, you're looking at, depending on what happens,
it's on.
Yeah, then you're looking back. Then you're looking at a first place in the division,
and you get three games against the Twins. Yeah. Right after, so it's like, well,
then you get four more games against Chicago.
Yep, right coming back that, home
at home. Yeah. So, you know, if they could sweep the White Sox, I don't think it'll happen. But if they did, then it's look out. You know, the Royals are back, and then you can, you know, take two out of three or all three from the Twins. And the next thing you know, the Royals got a big streak going. And or say you take two out of three from Chicago, two out of three from Minnesota, then you're 4-2, and that puts them at what, 9-4 out of their last 13, and then going into a four-game series at home, which would be basically, if you could take three out of four, I think that would probably put them in first place or close to it, depending on what else Chicago does. I mean, that's the Royals are in a good position now that if they can keep this rolling, they can really make some noise and get back to leading the division.
Yeah, it's a lot of motivation for them. Over Absolutely. The next few days. And, you know, if they're hitting better, great. That's awesome. And the pitching seems to be improving too. So if that's going to start working together at the same time, well, you know, that bodes well for the Royals, especially against division teams. They haven't played that well on the road recently. You know, the West Coast road trip was really just short of a disaster. It was just a miserable set of games, and then going against Cleveland and against the Yankees, that was rough too. So winnable games there, at least, you know, on the West Coast, it was just miserable almost the whole time. I want to see how they do on the road this time through, maybe playing against other teams in their division. Maybe that does help. I don't know. We'll see. They're playing better right now, though. So they're playing better now going into some of these games. And I don't see, you know, I mean, pending what happens tonight, I don't see much reason to not continue to grow in the optimism, I guess.
Yeah, because it goes back to what we were talking about kind of at this point last season when the Royals were doing really well and why we thought it was sustainable. You know, at that point, I mean, you had guys like Lorenzo Cain, who was having a career year and continued on to have a career year. But similar to that scenario, nobody's really playing over their heads right now. You know, the pitching is improving, but it's not great right now. You know, it's not Matt Latos for the White Sox, where you know this is not going to continue. You know, maybe Matt Latos has a career year. That's definitely within the realm of possibility, but to be what he was the first month or even up to now of the season, you know, is most likely not a reality. But it's kind of like what we always talk about with, you know, I think we've mentioned it when talking about Omar Infante in the past, but regression goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So Kendrys Morales, Lorenzo Cain, Alex Gordon, those guys are regressing now back to the mean, but they were below it. You know, yeah. So that's a good regression. You want to see that. You want to regress towards the mean from there. And so with all those guys now, and even on this, you know, little mini streak, they haven't been playing out of the – okay, Lorenzo Cain hit the 3 home runs in one game, but that kind of stuff, that happens. But, you know, other than that, they haven't been playing out of their minds, whatever. Lorenzo Cain still only has 2 doubles on the season. And there's – you know, everyone's kind of been playing within themselves, which is back to the Royals baseball of last year. So, and Kendrys Morales is still having terrible luck. He's still hitting below 200. You know, so if he were to kind of regress back towards that mean in a positive direction, then things could pick up even more. So it's, as you said, there's no reason to doubt any growing optimism. So going into this series here with the White Sox coming up this weekend, you have the Royals are lucky that they'll miss Chris Sale, which is fantastic.
Always a good thing. So,
yes, they're still getting Jose Quintana, which mm-hmm. he's been having a very good season and he's a very good pitcher, but not quite on Sale's level. And then Carlos Rondon. And then I can't remember the other guy was. I heard it on the radio on the way home. But somebody who's hasn't made very many starts for the White Sox.
Oh, I haven't looked at the probables yet. So,
but anyway, the reason I bring that up is because they'll be pitching against – we got Danny Duffy's going to make another start this weekend, and Dylan G will both be making starts this weekend. And Duffy has been thrust back into the rotation, as has Dylan G, or not back into starting pitching. G was never in rotation for the Royals previously, but with Chris Young and Chris Medlin both hitting the DL with arm issues that are apparently not a huge deal,
right,
but enough to prevent them from getting their starts, Duffy got thrust in, and as you mentioned earlier, he pitched really well. He was only on a strict 50 pitch limit, which actually, surprisingly enough, 50 pitches was enough to get him through 3 innings.
Yeah, have been some times where that's
90.
Yeah,
not quite 90. It was like,
I think he had one last year where he did that, where it was like he had like 80 pitches after 3 innings,
something like that. Well, there was the big 9 strikeout performance in 3 2/3 innings that, well, I think it was 2014, but you know, it
that was somewhere pitches. Like 20. I don't remember 20... when that was. 2013 maybe. It was against the Cardinals, I think.
Because it was, let's see,
I'm thinking of the same thing.
He missed
most of 2012.
Okay, so is that when he came back in 2013? It must have been.
I think.
Anyway,
I don't recall. Is,
that's what the reference.
His reputation is not one for pitch efficiency.
No, it is not.
Generally,
but he looked really good in those three innings. And, you know, 50's still a little, or I can't remember what was his actual pitch count.
It was like 47, I think, or yeah, so, in three innings.
It was still a tad high, but reasonable. You know, if you saw someone 47 after three innings, maybe a little.
16 per, and he struck 16. Out, what, five guys?
Yeah.
So that's going to take it up a little bit, too.
I mean, he had,
how it goes.
Had a really solid outing and kind of gave you that, hey, you know, maybe he could. Sometimes a pitcher needs some time in the bullpen to figure things out. And, you know, someone like, we keep bringing up the Zach Greinke thing where he had his time. I don't know, maybe that's a little all that maybe that's all that Danny Duffy needed. And, you know, I'm obviously not going to call it too soon here, but an encouraging sign. And then Dylan G pitched a really good five innings in his start, and then kind of fell apart in the sixth, which, you know, is to be expected, I suppose, when you have
someone who hadn't
pitcher
really
who's
started.
Had been stretched out, and you know the later innings are going to be more of a struggle. I think they knew the sixth inning was pushing it, but wanted to get him out there, see what he could do, and probably left him out there a little too long. Things happen, and next thing you know, is a tough outing, but. You know, overall, it was still an encouraging sign because those first five innings were really sharp from Dylan G. So, those guys, I mean, from what you've seen, and what do you think is going to happen this weekend? What are your thoughts on G and Duffy in the rotation?
Well, I like G. I liked him a lot before the season started, and he pitched well in those relief outings, and then pitched well again. You know, if he can continue to you know, get that kind of time in the rotation and get worked up to be in the 80, 90, 100 and just kind of join the group, that I think he can give you some solid innings. There's probably going to be a point where he starts to get hit a little bit because he is basically a number four, number five starter. And you know, those guys, if you get two out of three good starts, you're pretty okay with that. For Duffy, you know, what I saw when he was in New York, he had one of those relief appearances. He came in, and he was just guns blazing. Like, he threw, I think, 15 pitches, and I think each and every one of them was a fastball from 96 to 99. And that's all he did. He just threw the fastball, and they couldn't touch it. And that seems to be, ever since that Detroit series where he gave up that home run to Saltalamacchia, that three-run homer, he's just been really working that fastball. And if he's going to be doing that as a starter with, you know, what you quote-unquote max effort, I think in a way, you know, you talk about, well, you're a starter, you need to pace yourself, things like that. You know, if he's only throwing 94 and he's taking something off and it makes him more hittable and it makes it easier to foul pitches off, then that's not going to make him more pitch efficient. But if he can throw 97 for five innings, he can probably get through that on 100 pitches. So I don't see any reason for Duffy to hold it back. And as long as he's got command and control and the velocity's there, I think he can be really good. We saw it 2 years ago. He was really good in the rotation for most of that season. And right now he's got, you know, 26 strikeouts in 21 innings, you know, basically thrown the same way he did on Sunday. So that's
the key. Sorry. The key for him has to be, it seems, not worrying about trying to pitch like a starter or pitch like a reliever and just, you know, going out there and pitching. Easier said than done, but it seems like Duffy, more so than a lot of pitchers, kind of that his mentality really affects his ability. And I think that is key. So that's I like that you mentioned that, because I definitely think that's key for him.
And they're coming into a stretch now where, you know, you had G pitched well, Duffy pitched well, Giordano pitched well most of the time. Kennedy pitched well, except for a couple innings he got a little messy, but he got through it. And if Volquez pitches well now, that's a turn through the rotation where everybody pitched pretty well, which hadn't happened in a while. You know, that's why Medlin and Young suddenly started having some health issues. You know, they went on the DL because they wrecked the bullpen. And I think they'll be fine down the line. You know, there were real things, you know, forearm issues with Chris Young and some inflammation on Chris Medlin's shoulder. So I'm not, you know, I don't want to just say, hey, they're faking it or the Royals are taking advantage of the DL, but they weren't pitching well, and it was an opportunity to get a couple new guys in, bring up a couple of arms to fill in the innings. So, you know, the Royals really seem to have taken to having some kind of, I guess, consistency or some level of performance that keeps them in games this last time through the rotation. And, you know, I think when it comes to it and Young and Medlin come back, they're definitely not guaranteed to get the rotation spots back if G and Duffy are pitching well, which is kind of what we thought was going to be the case, you know, in the preseason and during spring training, was that these four guys were probably going to be this kind of up and down fluid pitching rotation group, just because not one of them is somebody that you really figure to be a regular 6-7 inning type of starter. They're all those kind of get through five innings type of guys. And, you know, I think that's probably going to be the case. There will probably be times where Duffy struggles or maybe needs to skip a start, or they want to shift things around. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but it's definitely encouraging to have everybody pitch well at least one time through. And if they can continue that, if, you know, the positive gains that Ventura got coming out of, you know, yesterday, where he was throwing 98, 99 with control and his secondary pitches looked good. I mean, if he snaps back to whatever adjustment he made, you know, I think that's going to be a very positive thing. And going forward, you know, you've got four guys and Dylan G, who, you know, can have, you know, they have good track records as starting pitchers. The defense is behind them, so that's a plus. You know, I just don't see how, you know, barring some collapses or injuries, that, you know, that group doesn't kind of get it done a little bit, especially the way, you know, compared to what was happening the last couple times through, where starters had short outings, the bullpen was really, really taxed. Now you can kind of stabilize things and maybe get back into the kind of roles where get five or six from your starter, go to your bullpen in the order you want. You know, you can make those decisions based on the game situation rather than really having to just cover innings, which is what was happening for a couple of weeks there.
Yeah, and I like what you said about Ventura, you know, his ability to – he looked sharp, which is the first time really this season that – I haven't seen all his starts, unfortunately, but from what I've seen, that was the first time that I've really seen him look really sharp. And he's had some other games that have been good, but – you know, like I think it was his first start of the season where it was like, I think he allowed one run in six and a third innings, had six strikeouts, but also six walks. And so it's like, well, that's, you know, that's not really all that effective. It's just kind of lucky. So when you put that many guys, I can't remember how many hits he had, but when you put that many guys on base, never a good thing, especially when you do it for free. But so that was good to see him. And like you said, it's a little concerning that things kind of spiraled pretty quickly on him, and he had to be pulled to get proper relief, make sure things didn't get too far out of control. But mm-hmm. You know, all the same, it's an encouraging sign. And at this point, you know, you're looking for wins, and you're looking for encouraging signs and trends. And right now, with Kennedy pitching really well, with Ventura hopefully making some strides to get back to where he needs to be, same with Duffy, you know, that's definitely super encouraging. And you know, the something that we haven't touched on a ton, you know, the bullpen has had a little bit of struggles, but you know, they seem to be getting back on track now. It's starting to feel, for the first time in a long while, you know, as of a couple weeks ago, I was kind of feeling like, oh man, I don't actually know what's going to happen once the starter leaves the game. You know, whereas the last two seasons, it's pretty much been just automatic. You know, it just, let's make this happen. Royals got a three-run lead, or two-run lead, three-run lead after six inning, game over.
Yeah, lock it down.
You didn't know that now for, you know, for a little bit there. But it's starting to inch closer towards that. I mean, you've got one of your bold predictions this season was Kelvin Herrera having a better season than Wade Davis. Looking pretty good right now, Mike.
Yeah,
your bold prediction's looking pretty good.
He's I mean, he's got like a 12-1 strikeout to walk ratio. It's
insane.
It's fun to kind of see. I mean, he's just, yeah. I mean, you, that pitch against Hanley Ramirez last night was just, oh, like,
that was so dirty.
He just, like, I've seen little leaguers take, you know, like 11th batter in the lineup, little leaguers give a better swing on pitches. Now, granted, of course, it's different. You know, it's a different pitcher throwing, but Man, yeah, he just worked Hanley Ramirez over, and it's just that's a
and I mean
that slider is just a wicked.
Ramirez was laughing about it.
Yeah, I mean, what it's one of those like what can you do things because guys still have they're not picking up his slider, and it's with good reason. You know, he throws 100 miles an hour and has a good changeup. How can you what can you do? Like if he's throwing with command, he's one of the best relievers in baseball, and it's just like. What can you do but sit there and laugh? That's all it comes down to.
And Wade Davis, it's kind of funny. Wade Davis has been still very effective. I mean, his ERA is like 1.23 or something. So he's only given up two runs the one time against the Braves, like we talked about. So he's still been very effective and still looks really, really good. But for if this does kind of carry out, it'll kind of feel similar to kind of the tail end of 2014, where you started to kind of hear the whispers a little bit of, is Wade Davis better than Greg Holland? Even though he's the eighth inning guy and Greg mm-hmm. Holland's the closer. And then 2015, it was really going the whole season. It was, man, he needs to be the closer. He's the better pitcher. So it almost feels like that could be happening again. Wade Davis isn't falling off like Holland did because of Holland's injury.
Yeah, hopefully Wade Davis doesn't pull out his
and
elbow.
Like I said, Wade Davis is still being incredibly effective. But that is just mm-hmm. – this is more – that's more towards even talking about how good Herrera has been that you could even say that you could make the argument right now today. By the end of the season, we could change our tune. You know, because Wade Davis is admittedly – I heard Joel Goldberg on the radio say that he talks to – when he talked to Wade Davis, that Wade always seems to – he told him he always seems to start kind of slow and hey, has to kind of get his feel back. The season should be kind of in swing – it should be in the swing of things by now. So by the end of the season, it could be different. But as of right now, I think you can make the argument that Herrera is a better pitcher. And, you know, I don't think you'd find too much protest.
So, no. I mean, there might be a little bit, but, you know, there's just –
it would not like – not like if you said
that Peter Moylan should be closing.
Yeah, you know, something, nothing. Or you know, last year if you would have said, "Oh well, Greg Holland,"
like Ryan Madsen should be closing or setting up or something
Greg
like that.
Where it's like better than Wade Davis. Like it was clear that he was. It was clear that Holland was injured, even though the Royals didn't want to admit it. But it was also clear that Wade Davis was better and more effective. So
yeah,
it's not one of those things that it's just absolutely clear who the better pitcher is, and the fact that I mean it's still they're both so good.
Yeah, it's like well okay, darn.
Yeah, it's really loose, and it's just Herrera. I mean, he looks so in the zone when he's out there pitching. I mean, he doesn't look like he's thinking. He's not overthrowing, not whatever. I mean, he's just out there letting it rip, having fun. He's like after that pitch with Ramirez, he walked off and Ramirez kind of smiled and basically tipped his cap to him and Herrera kind of smiled back and
like
was
yeah I know
like, I got you.
Yeah, got you. And hey, he's had like three of those reactions now where guys are just like well yeah, okay, like Hanley Ramirez and Miguel Cabrera, and maybe it's just those two that really stick out, but those are big names and he fooled them and like worked them over, so it's like that's fun to watch. And when that's your setup guy, I mean,
developing that slider in the like we talked about last year.
Yeah.
I mean, being able to develop that pitch has just taken him to. He was really good before that, but being able to develop and have confidence in that pitch has just made him just in a different stratosphere as a reliever. So, you know, he may be in a situation again where similar to Wade Davis, where because he's not a closer, and you know he's. His reputation, I don't want to say it was tarnished, but it took a little bit of a hit a couple of years ago when he had that season where he had like a 8-game stretch where he gave up 10 home runs.
Yeah,
and
it was just that one month.
And the rest of the season, he was phenomenal, but just that one stretch really skewed his numbers. And then so I think that his reputation kind of took a little hit, and he's building it back now to where – but still, you know, the point of that being – even despite all that, he may be in a situation like Wade Davis was last year where, for whatever reason, he wouldn't win the best reliever in baseball, even though the statistics may bear it out. So that'll be kind of something interesting to watch there. But
It's a good problem to have.
Yes, and it's good to see the bullpen
save games. So
yeah, and it's good to see the bullpen getting back on track. And as we talked about with offense getting back on track, one of the bright spots of the offense has been a little known man by the name of Chester Cuthbert, the chess lord, if you will.
The chess lord.
He, you know, Mike Moustakas going down was a big blow. He was off to a great start to the season. The Balboni mark was in reach,
yeah,
in terms of a pace standpoint. So it was really unfortunate to see him go down when he did. And especially with the Royals struggling, it's like, oh, man.
Now you lose Moose.
Now you lose Moose, big bat in the lineup. Who's going to come replace him? And Chester Cuthbert is the obvious answer. And, you know, he's, I think I've said it on the show before, but he was my first love of the Royals' second wave prospects. Of when he came up and he was 17 and he hit just a bunch of home runs and plateaued quickly after that. And we even talked with Jason Parks back when we used to have him on the show a lot. We talked with him and he was a real big Chester Cuthbert fan back in the day. And to me, he always seemed kind of like a guy where his stats never blew you away, but once he settled into a new level, then he looked like he belonged. Or, you know, obviously I didn't see him at every level, but from, you know, hearing scouts talk about him and seeing his statistics and all that kind of stuff, it seemed like that was the kind of player that he was. And so I kind of thought the same would happen at the major league level. He would never get to the point where you would say, oh man, Chester Cuthbert has to be in the major leagues, has to be playing right now, like Hosmer was in 2011. He probably mm-hmm. wouldn't get there, but you'd be like, okay, we need him up here. Let's bring him up, give him a shot. And then he just kind of sticks. I mean, he looks like a major league player. He doesn't look intimidated. He looks good on defense, made some really good defensive plays.
Yep.
And offensively, I mean, he hit a home run the other day. He's had a few doubles, had some RBIs. He looks pretty good at the plate. And it's going to be a real tough decision when Moose comes back on what they do with Chester Cuthbert, because he doesn't warrant being sent down. He has earned a spot on this roster, but I don't know if there's one for him to have.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that they're struggling with. It's, you know, he played a little bit of second base last year in the minors, and I think there were, what, three innings and a blowout last season in the big leagues where he played some. But, you know, everybody that, you know, we've talked to, Clint Scholes and Hunter Samuels, and they both get a chance to see Omaha quite a lot because, well, they're there. And, you know, they both agree that Cuthbert is probably not going to be a second baseman. Like, I asked them to kind of put him in the spectrum of recent Royal second baseman, from Getz to, you know, Giovitella to Omar to Christian Colon, et cetera, et cetera. And they kind of said, well, maybe he'd play like Mike Aviles defensively. And it's like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I like that. You know, he does well at third base, and I think that's, one, his natural position, and two, that's a lot more of a reaction kind of area, whereas the second base position is a lot more range, positioning, getting to it. There's a lot more kind of little things that you have to do there, turning the double play, you know, just so many different, you know, covering base stealers, things like that. A lot of different things that Cuthbert maybe isn't accustomed to, and maybe not, he's probably athletic enough to at least handle it in a short term, but I don't know if he's, you know, I don't know that I would buy it unless I happen to see it over like a season where he played well there. And I don't know if that's going to be in the cards. But he has certainly hit well enough. I'd like to see him walk a little bit more, but, you know, he's 23 years old. It's, you know, it's probably not going to happen.
If he's
hitting well, you know, then I guess it's okay. But yeah, it's, you know, it's just not how it usually works out. And, you know, he's only played 11 games, so you could see maybe later he walks a little bit more if you know, pitchers start respecting what he can do with the bat.
And right now he's hitting really well. So when people hit really well, they don't tend to walk because they're seeing the ball really well. They're swinging it a lot.
They're busy hitting. So.
But he's also a South American player where, you know, they tend to be free swingers a lot. So, you know, there is that.
Yeah.
But
so I'm guessing when Moose comes back and he's due back on Saturday is the kind of idea, I guess. you know, Cuthbert's probably going to go back to Omaha to play just so he can be playing full time. You know, there's not really much reason to pull him up just to play once, maybe twice at best at the big league level. If he can get, you know, more exposure to pitches to stay in rhythm and be ready for the next time they might need somebody, if there's another injury or if he gets just really hot and there's no way to keep him out, you know, those are kind of what they're probably looking at. You know, those are the factors. So it'd be nice to keep him around. You know, I like him too. He's one of my favorites, kind of underrated prospect types. He certainly looks like he belongs. He's still got some developing to do, but, you know, he's the talent you can definitely see is there. And if he can stay, great, but I don't expect it as long as everything stays on track right now.
Yeah, I mean, the second base thing, I think there's a footwork issue that, like you mentioned with, you know, like Clinton Hunter had said, that they don't really see that as something that he has the ability to do long term. But I think if you're the best case scenario as a fan to see him continue to be on the team would be you have some sort of weird DH platoon type thing almost, where since Morales is struggling, you give him a few more days off until maybe he can find himself and gives you an excuse to keep Chesler up and put him in the lineup as a DH maybe, and then you can kind of rotate that spot with him and, you know, let Moose kind of ease back into the field with his thumb injury. And then some days Moose is DHing and Morales is sitting and Cuthbert, but then that gets all really confusing and there's no sense in really having two third baseman only, because, you know, Moose is in the same. It's really kind of funny reading the defensive scouting reports on Chester Cuthbert and Moose when they both, as they came up through the respective ranks, very similar in how they were talked about defensively. Both have very good arms, very good accuracy, can make all the throws necessary in the field from a third base standpoint, and have okay range for a third baseman, but not necessarily a skill set that translated to, you know, shortstop or second base or anything like that. So, you know, it's really unfortunate. It's one of those really good problems to have. The only drawback is that Cuthbert has been really solid and good and feels like a Royals player, but hasn't been good enough that the Royals are like, oh man, this has been a sweet 10-game audition. Let's go flip him for a right fielder right now since we got Moose or something like that. And he hasn't been quite that good, unfortunately. So they're in definitely a weird position with a difficult couple of days of decision making that, you know, I don't envy them. And unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is Cuthbert's just going to be sent down, and that's going to kind of suck because, like I said, he deserves to be up here still.
Yeah, I mean, you got Moose coming back in a couple of weeks. Mike Minor is at least tentatively due to come back. He's on rehab now, so they've only got so many days that they can keep him on rehab. I think he's going to make probably a couple starts in Omaha, and then like that first week of June, he might be up. So there's another decision you have to make with your pitchers. You know, who does Minor jump right into the rotation? Do you move Duffy back out? Does, you know, so much depends on how guys are pitching at that time or if there are any injuries or anything like that. But, you know, if they bring him up, then, well, there's some more movement, and you're going to have Chris Medlin and Chris Young who are due to come back from the DL at some stage. So two more arms. So just a lot of stuff that's going to be coming up and moving, and I'm not sure how it's going to shake out yet. And the Royals may not either. You know, they may just be in a wait and see and kind of figure out, okay, well, if somebody, you know, if they don't feel like Medlin is ready just yet, they may give him a couple more days, give him a shot to throw an inning in Omaha, and then, you know, let's say you need to swap out a pitcher who pitched some long relief, then maybe you make that move. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do and what kind of timeline they take on those guys. It's just, you know, just they're ready to kind of do some moves. They made a weird move today, even calling up Whit Merrifield and sending Christian Colon to AAA, which was kind of unexpected. But, you know, I guess it's kind of a precursor of feeling like Moustakas is going to be ready to play every day, and it gives them an opportunity to use Merrifield as an outfielder if they need to give some days off. So we'll see. It's a very strange kind of deal, but, you know, they're they're willing to make some of these moves, obviously. So when Miner's ready, I don't think they're going to hesitate to do anything. I mean, they can't hesitate to do anything. It's rehab. If Medlin gets back and looks good, you know, they'll probably find a spot to use him. And if that means Brian Flynn or Scott Alexander or whomever goes down, or Chenming Wong gets designated for assignment, or whoever it is, you know, they're probably going to take whatever steps they need to get big leaguers they like on the field. And if it means they lose a potential guy who deserves to be on a big league team, well, that's kind of the cost of being in the race, I guess. You know, it's kind of like the last few years where we've seen they leave spring training and guys that they have to cut get picked up right away by other teams. You know, it's that isn't how it used to be. You didn't usually have a lot of big leaguers in big league camp. You had like maybe 20 and had to fill in with guys who didn't need to be there. I'm thinking like 2008, 2009 kind of years where you're still waiting for the prospects to, you know, develop to a point where you can bring them up. So I guess it's another one of those good problems to have. They could also designate Omar Infante for assignment anytime they want to, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's really kind of strange that they would bring up Merrifield and keep Infante and put Cologne hasn't done anything that you would necessarily say, oh man, he's won the second base job, he has to have it. But at the same time, you know, Infante is just he's awfulness wrapped in. So, you know, he. At least with Cologne, even though Cologne is kind of past that prospect standpoint, there's still upside there. You know what you're getting. You've got it for the last 2 years with Omar Infante. Mm-hmm. Cologne, there's still a little bit more I think you can squeeze out of that, but just for whatever reason, the Royals just are not interested in trying to find that out. And so they're comfortable with Infante, and then bring it up Merrifield makes them think that, hey, maybe they're he's going to get some time. It's like, I don't know what all the, you know, it was a little bit perplexing move, as you mentioned. So I don't know. I don't know what their plans are for everything. And all I'm hoping is that the Royals can swallow a little bit of pride and a whole lot of money and say, Infante, Omar, thanks for your time, but your services are no longer needed.
Yep. And that's probably the main thing is just it's money. He still has a year on his contract. He still has a buyout. There's still the rest of this year's salary. Nobody else is going to trade for him. So I don't know what you're going to do. You know, he and Cologne, they're hitting about the same pretty much. They both have about the same power potential, about the same speed. I mean, they're very similar as far as where they profile. But the thing is, Cologne can probably still get better, and Infante, I don't think, he's not going to get any healthier in the middle of the season.
No.
So I don't know if he's ever going to get any kind of better. We hope that surgery on his elbow was going to make him better this year, but that didn't happen. So I think if you're going with two guys who are relatively equal, the younger guy who might still be able to figure something out, that's probably the guy you want to go for. But, you know, Cologne just doesn't seem to fit regularly with this group for some reason. You know, he's not getting any opportunity full time, at least. I mean, it looked like he was going to. He was starting a few games more than Infante over the last couple weeks, but, you know, it just isn't,
wasn't giving them what they wanted. I think the issue is, if I had to pinpoint something, my guess would be that some morning in the clubhouse, when Yost was getting his cereal ready, Cologne must have peed in it intentionally.
Right.
In his Cheerios. That would be my guess. I don't know. But, I mean, again, you know, that's – don't want to put too much on something like that. I mean, Cologne has definitely not done what he needed. I think the Royals have given him every opportunity, and he has not done what he's needed to do to win the job. But all the same, I still think – he probably has a better opportunity for a higher level of success there than Infante does. So unfortunately, that is not what's happening. But we'll stick with the offense, and we'll finish up the show with this. But just kind of a small note again on the absurd sexiness and incredible awesomeness that is Eric Hosmer. I'm going to need a moment to collect myself, so go ahead and give your thoughts, Mike.
Well, I mean, Hosmer's always been among, if not the top favorite prospect of mine when he was coming up. You know, I'm just naturally just drawn to the first base prospects because, I don't know, I think I like George Brett, and Bob Hamlin followed him with the Rookie of the Year season, and I thought that was pretty cool. And then I always thought that Joe Vitiello and Larry Sutton and Ryan Sheely and Keeley Kaihui and et cetera, sure, were all going to be just beastly, and none of them were. None of them did much of anything. And then Hosmer comes around, looks the part, kind of, you know, off and on, good season, bad season, whatever. Last year finally has something going. And then this year continues it. And, you know, he's putting up, you know, the fabled 300, 400, 500 slash. He's hit home runs the last two games, going into the third game of this Boston series. And he's not getting cheated. Like, they're 420-foot bombs pretty much every time.
He leads the league in home runs of that distance or further, doesn't he?
Of 440-foot.
40. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. 440.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, most of his home runs are
four of, by the way.
Yeah, they're not like wall scrapers. Like, these are just drives. Like, he just crushes the ball. And, you know, he had one last night. It was 109 miles per hour off the bat. Today he had a knuckleball, 111 miles per hour off the bat. It's just like he's just locked in, and he's walking a lot. He's you know, leading the team in he's second on the team in doubles. He's tied with Gordon for the lead in walks. He's not striking out a lot. He's getting on base. He's having good at-bats. I mean, he's doing everything you expect a cornerstone first baseman to do in the middle of your lineup. And it's excellent to see it, because that's what you need from a guy like Eric Hosmer. That's why you drafted him in the first round. That's why he has his face on video games, and he's your first guy to send to MLB Network for an interview, and that's your face of the franchise right there. And he's hitting like that MVP type, that franchise star type of guy right now. And you know, he's doing so at a time where Mike Moustakas has been hurt, and you know, if anybody's carrying this team at all, it is Eric Hosmer. You know, he leads the team in runs scored, tied for the lead in RBIs, most hits. I mean, he's doing everything right now, and it's awesome to see him realize that potential now after a couple of years of, you know, he kind of looks the part but isn't quite there. Now he's there. I was looking it up on Baseball Prospectus, and his true average, which is, again, just kind of a balanced way of looking at all of his contributions going into today, his true average was third in all of baseball among first basemen, behind Brandon Belt and Anthony Rizzo, who are two pretty significantly good first basemen. And when you look at WARP, his wins above replacement player, he's first in the American League among first basemen. So he is outclassing the league right now in what he's doing, and it's great to finally see that happening.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about it before, just as you mentioned, that kind of tiptoeing towards, toeing the line of being a superstar in this league, and I think we are seeing him assert himself as such right now. And I shouldn't even say that. We've seen it. It's happened, and here he is. And it's kind of interesting, actually, probably shouldn't count all our chickens before they hatch, if you will, because it's interesting looking back at last year at this time. He was actually having a very comparable, statistically speaking, very comparable season at this time last year. For whatever reason, it feels different. Part of it for me is kind of the eye test, where to me, I don't know about you, Mike, but to me, he looks different. Last year, he looked good, you know, and he looked like he was, you know, putting a lot of things together, starting to really kind of step into that mold. But this year he looks really confident. He looks really comfortable, more comfortable than I've seen him personally. I'm obviously not a scout or trying to make some sort of broad assessment, but looks more comfortable at the plate than I've seen him, has better approach than I've seen him have at any point in his career, which leads into what you were talking about with more walks, less strikeouts, those types of things. And like you said, I mean, not only just his home runs, but all his hits. I mean, his singles, his doubles. I mean, he is just destroying the baseball right now. And it's fantastic to see. I mean, the guy is a legit superstar. And, I mean, he's on pace. If you look at what his right now, because he started off at the beginning of the season, that was the one kind of thing where it was like, oh, well, he doesn't hit many home runs. He only hit like one home run the first month or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then now he's really heated up. And if you extrapolate his stats over the course of a season and give him a few ticks higher on the OPS and on base percentage to get into that kind of 1,000 OPS range, then you're looking at, which he's at 951 right now. So, you know, he's really close. But, I mean, that's basically the season Josh Donaldson had last year, who won the MVP award. So, I mean, when you're looking at those type of stats, I mean, that's
where
especially
you're working.
Yeah, especially if the Royals can keep this ship righted and keep chugging along and winning some more games and get back into the playoff picture. If the Royals make the playoffs and Eric Hosmer has those kind of stats, then I would find it hard to, unless, you know, someone like a Mike Trout just blows up even further than he normally does, you know, then, I mean, you got to think he'd be really the leading candidate for MVP. I'm saying it, calling it right now.
I mean, he's that having that kind of year. I mean, you know, he's on pace for 30 some homers right now. If he does continue to hit. And the thing is, like, this year, it's not like he's had, like, a good six-game stretch. It's basically he's gotten a hit in just about every game or gotten on base on just about every game. And the power is just kind of now starting to pop in. I mean, he's really kind of hitting his stride right now. We'll see how it turns out the rest of the year. I mean, he's going to have a slump at some point, I'm sure. He's going to have periods where, you know, he gets some tough lefties and doesn't hit. And there's going to probably be some times where he starts hitting the ball on the ground a lot more too. But right now, he's given them everything they could have asked for. And he's doing so at a time where they're starting to play better. And, you know, it's fortunate to have him in the middle of that lineup so that you can cash in on anybody who gets on. And if not, well, he's just hitting the ball over the fence anyway and driving himself in. So they'll take that as well.
Indeed, you know, and it's just, it's so awesome, you know, not since Carlos Beltran really have we seen a Royals player come up through the system and develop into a true legit superstar like this. And, you know, I think players like Moustakas and Gordon and Kane and those guys, you know, when they, you know, like when Gordon hit free agency this year, when those guys hit free agency in future years, you know, I think people will be like, oh, you know, yeah, I'd like to have him on our team, but it's not just like, oh, man, oh, my God, I can't believe our team signed whoever, you know, but Hosmer is that guy. So if Hosmer gets to free agency after 2017 and the Royals don't destroy all the banks in Kansas City to try and get him to stay and he leaves, whatever team signs him is going to be very celebratory. Assuming, again, this is assuming that it all continues, which I am assuming because that's what – you know, I believe is going to happen, but teams are going to be that excited. He's going to be that guy. So it's kind of cool. And, you know, it's going to be, regardless of whatever Hosmer's future is after 2017, I'm a fan because he's exciting. He's really fun to watch right now.
Yep. Yep. And hope maybe they'll figure out an extension for him. But the more he does this,
the less likely.
The more he's pricing himself out. And, you know, I guess if that means that the Royals have two more seasons making the playoffs behind Eric Hosmer, I guess you'll take that. You know, absent, you know, it's certainly better than no playoffs and not being able to sign him anyway. So you take what you can get in this case. But, you know, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, even when, like, Sweeney left, even Beltran now, like, I like Beltran still, even though he kind of kicked our butts in the Yankees series. It's like, yeah, it's still Beltran, though. You know, I didn't hate Damon when he left that much. I mean, a little bit, but not to the point that a lot of other people did.
Right. And those were back in the days when media wasn't quite like it is now. We didn't have all the information that we have now that people are constantly pumping out. And the organization was even stingier about information back then than they are now. So the perception that we had was driven by, you know, media, talk radio, that kind of thing. And the perception that they were driving at the time was that it was just Royals don't care about winning. They're all out to make money. And while there may have been some kernels of truth in there, you know, it was really just because the Royals weren't going to get into a fight with the media about, you know, if they want to make money or if they want to win baseball games. And so that kind of, that perception just kind of sat out there. So when Beltran's traded off, when Damon's gone and Jermaine Dye's gone and all these people are all these great players are traded away, then, you know, that perception is that the Royals just don't care and don't want them, or that the players don't want to be here. And so I think that's why there's a lot of negative feelings that way, because it's, you know, somehow the players' fault for not working with the Royals at the time.
Yeah.
Which you get some of that feeling. I definitely think there was some of that feeling with like a Damon.
And, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Beltran, you never really heard much about with that. That was kind of more on the Royals. See, but I think that's where some of the negative aspects come from. And it all started, I think, with Danny Tartabull, because there's this weird sort of idea that the Yankees, it's kind of died down, but you know, as of 5 years ago, it was always just like, oh, so and so is just going to be on the Yankees eventually.
Right.
As if the Royals were just constantly trading players to the Yankees for
it's,
peanuts.
It's kind of like when the Kansas City A's kept trading good players to the Yankees in the you know, mid 60s and early and late 50s and stuff. It's like, no, it's not the same thing. There was a stretch there where, yeah, everybody was saying, well, he's good now, but he's just going to end up on the Yankees. Well, for a while, the only guy that had went immediately from the Royals to the Yankees via free agency was like Chili Davis in like 2000. Like, okay, well, I mean, that sucks because Chili Davis hit like 30 homers in 1999, I think it was. That's what Aaron Gile, I think, was another guy, but they released him. So it's not like he had a good year and then jumped.
Right.
Like he was signing somewhere because they were going to give him a job. And so I, you know, it's a silly meme and narrative that popped up back then, but it's still kind of happened. I mean, people expect Hosmer to be a Yankee as soon as he's done in Kansas City, and maybe he will be.
Yeah, and I think that has a little bit more validity to it, given his admitted Yankee fandom when he was a kid, because I believe his dad is from New York. That's
I
right.
I think so, yeah.
Some sort of familial connection to New York. And so it was when they had Sunday Night Baseball and Jessica Mendoza was interviewing him, asking him who his favorite teams were. I mean, this was out before that, but, and he mentioned the Yankees and the Marlins because of New York connections, and he grew up in Miami. So, in Miami, he could go to Miami too, because they've opened up. They're no stranger to the bankrolls. So,
right.
You know,
right.
It'll take $200 million to get him. And
they're just going to trade him 2 years later anyway.
Exactly. So. You know, they'll package him with Giancarlo Stanton, and somebody will give their entire organization.
Probably the Dodgers.
And that'll probably be worth it.
So, yeah. Yeah, but he'll probably be a Yankee, but that's fine.
Well, so has been the trend lately as the Royals have struggled. We have ended this show on a positive note, as the Royals have ended the last few games on a positive note. So that's all we have for you today. But before we leave, a reminder, the Kelly's Block Party is coming up. It's the 29th, right? 29th.
Sunday, May 29th is the day before Memorial Day.
Most likely don't have to work, so don't worry about that.
Right, right. $10 entry. Tickets are available on Eventbrite. You can just search via Google. Probably put the link up somewhere. It's on our Twitter page at KC Baseball Vault. Also, there's live music. There are food trucks. They have beers out there. They will spot you your first beer if you are of age to make the entry. And you even get a koozie. And hosted by Kelly's and McCoy's. Fifth year they've done it. Should be a lot of fun. If it rains, well, you're going to get wet, but you're going to have good beer and music and food and things like that. So that's coming up on the 29th, we might do some kind of giveaways too for some Kelly's gift certificates here in the next couple weeks. We've got some burning a hole in our pocket.
Indeed.
And it's probably not healthy for us to use them on ourselves.
No, definitely not.
Probably not, because we want to. We want people to be responsible with their drinking habits.
That's right. So be responsible. Party at Kelly's. That's how you do it.
Yep. In that order.
In that order, definitely. So with that, we will leave you on this evening or this morning or this afternoon or whenever you choose to listen to this fantastic podcast program that we provide for you. So as always, folks, cannot thank you enough. Thank you so much for listening. It's always a pleasure to bring you some what we think is solid Royals content. So hope you enjoy. Thank you for listening. Go to Kelly's Block Party May 29th, Kelly's and McCoy's. Eventbrite for the tickets. Be sure to be out there. Should be a good time. As always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. It's springtime, which means two things: Royals baseball and the Westport Block Party. The fifth annual Westport Block Party is once again hosted by McCoy's and our friends at Kelly's Westport Inn. The Westport Block Party is May 29th, starting at 8 p.m. rain or shine, and tickets are just $10. And your ticket gets you access to a fun annual tradition of dancing in the streets and the best beers in town. And this year, your ticket gets you one drink on the house, and you even get to take home a souvenir event koozie. Come on out and hear Twice on Sunday as they mix the songs you love and have a drink on Kelly's. That is the Westport Block Party, May 29th, starting at 8 p.m. Follow Kelly's at Kelly's Bar KC on Twitter or visit kellyswestportinn.com for ticket details.
First inning, like, oh, Jackie Bradley hit a home run, like, good lord, that guy turned into Babe Ruth all of a sudden.
I remember, like, what was it, early last year, or maybe it was somewhere in 2014, he just didn't hit. He wasn't hitting at all.
Who, Jackie Bradley?
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone was
he
like,
he was doing nothing, and then he blew up. He's good. They got a lot of those dudes who are just annoyingly good at everything.
I know, right?
Betts and Brock Holt.
Yeah, Brock Holt. I remember thinking that guy, like, oh, that's just a funny name. And then he ended up being like a...
Oh,
like
no,
a
this dude hits it everywhere.
Yeah, like a, like a better Trevor Plouffe. It's like...
Yes. It's even a so better name, Trevor Plouffe versus Brock Holt.
I know, right?
Man, that's like... Like in Punch-Out, like Glass Joe and Piston Honda. Exactly. It's like, that's what you... Trevor Plouffe is Glass Joe and... Brock Holt is Piston Honda.
Piston Honda. Exactly.